Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. This week we're talking about expectations for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers in the class of 2020 in football recruiting. What are your expectations? If you're the Oregon Ducks, do you expect to finish number one with a top 10 consensus recruiting class from now on? If you're Oregon State, do you understand the rebuild? Do you have a little more patience with Coach Jonathan Smith and you say, you know, they got last year? I'd be okay with last again as long as we see some national improvement and a few more wins. I can give them that. Or do you expect a top 10, top 8 Pac-12 finish? What do you expect? Hit up the Better You Today text line, 55305. If you're the Oregon Ducks, I know this staff about a lot of things. They have Andy Avalos, who's a proven X's and O's guy at a lower level. But generally speaking, this coaching staff is not real proven in terms of X's and O's. They're recruiting guys. So they need to be held to a different, and I'd say higher standard than maybe even in terms of just recruiting success, a guy like Chip Kelly, who is this offensive innovator who doesn't really like recruiting. And you go, you know, I'll kind of take his recruiting classes at face value because I know he's got a vision for where he wants these guys to go in the offense. If you're Mario Cristobal and you're a recruiter and your staff's all recruiters, you better finish really high in recruiting. Now, none of it'll matter. Oregon fans would be happy if they finish 40th in recruiting this year. If Justin Herbert puts together a big year and they make a run at a national title or a Pac-12 championship. But if we're divorcing on-field performance next year from recruiting expectations, what do you expect if you're Oregon? And I think if you're Oregon, you need to be a little bit careful. Because if you're an Oregon fan and right now your thing is, you know what, from now on, Oregon needs to win the Pac-12 conference in the recruiting trail, that's probably not going to happen real consistently. Not only did USC have their most historic down year ever, Oregon has only once finished atop the Pac-12 recruiting standings, and it's no coincidence that it happened last year, the same year USC and UCLA finished with historically bad recruiting classes. Oregon was able to fill that vacuum and add talent. Not only that, but we've talked about it on the show a number of times, and if you really want to look at it and take a peek at what the state of Washington is producing in the class of 20 and 2021, it is scary. Now, keep in mind, Keely Ringo, one of the top corners in the entire country, he's in Arizona. He grew up in Seattle. He still trains with the 7-on-7 and plays with the 7-on-7 team from Seattle. He just meets them at tournaments. So he's still kind of a Seattle-based kid. If you count him, just the Seattle area might have 6 or 7 5-star kids coming out of it in the next 2 years. And they all train at FSP. Tracy Ford runs FSP, big Washington fan. A bunch of the former Washington players train there, whether even the former pros. Danny Shelton just came back and signed a jersey for him because he was doing a workout at FSP. Those kids are super connected to Washington. And forget the 6 or 7 5-star guys, and those guys are obviously great. Even if they get half of those guys, there's another dozen high-level 4-star guys. And I'm talking about high-level. Sam Adams, his dad played for the Seahawks. Sam Adams is a 4-star prospect. He has offers from like Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan as a running back or outside linebacker. He'll end up playing running back. One of the top 2 running backs on the West Coast. That's your 4-star guy. That's arguably like the 8th best guy out of Washington. Oregon needs to break that up. Oregon's going to have to make some inroads in Washington. But Washington has that pretty much in a vice grip right now. And if USC improves and Stanford does a little better, you could be looking at a situation, Marcus, pretty easily where Oregon ends up with the number 3 or number 4 recruiting class in the Pac-12, a class that's ranked 16th or 17th in the country next year. That would probably be my prediction right now. They'll finish 3rd or 4th in the Pac-12, 16th to 18th in the country. And I think Oregon fans going to be really disappointed, like, what happened? And I don't think that's a failure.
Yeah, I don't think it's a failure at all, and you hit it on it perfect with
UCLA and USC, historically bad, right? Historically bad because for the most part, like we've talked about before, when these LA kids, these kids from California, once they get those two offers, that's like, that's an instant, you know, USC can kind of put them away knowing that they're their guys. But since they've been so bad, both the coaching staffs have, I don't want to say been a wreck, but they've been kind of a mess, you know? And so when kids like this see that, they don't want to go there, right? And you see Oregon's up and coming. Mario Cristobal is, you know, he's a super high energy guy. And kids see that and you're like, I want to play there, right? I want that. You know, they obviously, Oregon has to flash everything above and they look like they're, you know, coming back to what Oregon used to be. But, you know, for me, I would say my expectation for him, it's after this, I see it, you're right. I would say maybe three to, actually, I'm going to stick with three. I mean, Washington's always going to be Washington. USC, you know, this is probably the one year that they're going to struggle. But, you know, that's nothing to hang your, you know, your head down.
But I think that's the line. I mean, I asked on Twitter today because I wanted to get a feel for what Oregon fan thought. What is your expectation now going forward? And over half the fan base said the number one class in the Pac-12 mm-hmm. and a top 10 class this year.
Right.
And listen, they might have a great on-field season. And if they make a run at the Pac-12 title and they go to the Rose Bowl or they, you know, knock on wood for Oregon fan, they make it to the college football playoff, then all bets are off because they could end up re-energizing this recruiting class and end up putting together a 5, 6, 7 class in the country. That's possible. It's possible. But it's not super likely at this point. And part of it is that vacuum with the Southern California kids last year. And yes, everyone nationally has recruited Southern California for a long time. But last year, a number of the kids Oregon got were kids that were just chalked up as very likely to go to UCLA or UCLA. So Clemson didn't spend a ton of time. Ohio State, Michigan, they didn't spend a ton of time. Oklahoma recruiting Southern California, they thought USC had that on lock. Well, Oregon went, we see the writing on the wall here. There's an opening. And Oregon got almost all of them. Oregon got like 7 of the top 19 kids in the state of California. And like 6 of them were from SoCal. Well, this year, teams are seeing that opening. And suddenly, Clemson's going after a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Alabama's going after the big linebacker there. Because it's like, this isn't a waste of time anymore. These kids aren't a lock to go to UCLA or USC.
Yeah.
So Oregon, the competition got fierce. And on top of that, USC and UCLA aren't going to recruit as badly as they did last year. It's not going to happen. And I just think it's a scary thing when you're an Oregon fan and you go into it. And I think Mario Cristobal, you can't pump the brakes on recruiting. Recruiting is full excitement, full go yeah. all the time. So he can't say, listen, guys, we had a top 10 recruiting class. We'd love to do that every year. But if there's not a ton of talent on the West Coast, or sometimes even worse, if there's a tremendous number of high-end talents on the West Coast, everybody spends all the extra time there, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, USC, Washington, and it becomes that much harder to recruit. And I think that's what it looks like in 2020. There are 6, 7 elite wide receivers on the West Coast, and the SEC schools are coming for them.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they didn't have to deal with quite as much of that.
Yeah, and even if they don't have to deal with quite as much as that, but just in general, like we were saying, As long as Mario Cristobal and the staff continue to give off this energy and show that, you know, what it's like to, you know, be a part of University of Oregon and the Ducks football, everything like that, if they continue that, I think you can just build off it, because the more good players you get, obviously they got a great recruiting class, maybe a couple years down the road, even maybe next year, like you said, maybe college football playoff, knock on wood, but you knock on the Rose Bowl, something, right? As long as you show success, players are going to see that and they're going to want to go there. Same thing when I went to, you know, Oregon State. That's when they finished, I think, number 11, right? And they ended up losing in the Alamo Bowl. But I saw the success, so I was like, okay, that's a place I want to go, right? It's fun, it's high energy, everything like that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head saying that's nothing to sneeze at if they finish in the top three. People forget, because we have this recency bias with recruiting that we think the new normal is whatever happened in the last year. That's one recruiting cycle, but people think it's a year of results. It's like, well, that's one recruiting cycle. One 5-star can move you up 4 or 5 spots. So for Oregon in 2020, understand that if the new normal for Oregon is top 20, that is a new normal. Oregon has only had a handful of recruiting classes in the top 20 in the history of the program. If that's the consistent marker of the standard, like I think it would be a disappointment if Oregon, with Justin Herbert as a senior, with all the hype they built, if they finished 23rd in the nation in recruiting next year. That would be disappointing. I think if I'm an Oregon fan, I say, you know, I don't think that hits the mark with this staff. This is a staff that's built to recruit. Mm-hmm. You need to finish with top 20 recruiting classes.
Exactly.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's a huge elevation. And I think Oregon fan needs to pump the brakes a little bit and stop going top 10 or bust. It's like, remember who you are.
Yeah.
Remember who you are a little bit. You are a program that's had one top 10 class ever. You're a program that's finished number one in the Pac-12 once ever. And it was last year. You finished in the top 20 in the nation like four times ever. So if that becomes the regular trend for 3 or 4 years, that's still unprecedented for the program. Just because it's not what it was that one really, really good year. And that's gonna ebb and flow. 2021, maybe they finish 8. 2020, maybe they finish 13. But they are not going to average top 10 classes from now on. I just don't think that's realistic. And I also think it's okay. When we talk expectations, that's my takeaway. That's my gift to Oregon fans is pump the brakes a little bit. Consistent top 20 recruiting classes is still an all-new standard, and you should be thrilled because it is hard. It's still hard to recruit to Oregon mm-hmm. with the talent in Oregon. This year, there's 1 4-star guy, 0 5-star guys. Next year, there might be 1 4-star guy, 0 5-star guys. Even Washington in the next couple of years has 7.
Yeah.
It's a different thing recruiting out of state.
You just got to get those, maybe like you said, maybe that one guy, that 1 5-star, which will bump you up. And it comes with the wins, right? You get more wins. More people are going to want to go there. Like we already said, say they win 10 games this season. I guarantee you they can pick up a 5-star easy, right? If they go to a kid's house, they sit down.
Feels like somewhere they're getting one, right?
Right, exactly. They're going to get one. It's not only – that's what Oregon has for them is it's not just the flash, not just, you know, the facilities. It's the fact that if you back it up with wins, you're going to, you know, maybe say instead of getting 7 or 8 wins, you get 10 wins, right? Then if you got 7 to 8 wins, you might not get a guy who you would get if you get 10 wins, right? It's just how it goes. And this is completely coming from someone who's experienced the recruiting cycle is as soon as they hit that 10-win mark, you think, okay, this is a place that's going to – it's something I want to be a part of, right? 10 wins is good. That's a good season.
When your buzz is all exciting, fans mm-hmm. are all excited, you're in the news, you're all over everything. A big season for Oregon. And not that you flush the prediction of 16 to 18. I'll stick with that early. That's my prediction. Obviously, things can fluctuate, but 16 to 18 seems reasonable based on how it looks. They're not the early favorite for like 3 or 4 or 5 top 50 guys. Last year, they kind of were. Last year, at this point, we were already kind of talking about, man, they might get like 6 top 50 guys, and they end up getting 4 or 5 of them, and that's why we ended up where we are. I still want to get to Oregon State's basketball recruiting class of 2015 was a top 25 class. It was full of coaches' kids, and they made the tournament in year one. Now that they've been bounced by Colorado, and I know Trace Tinkle still got another year, but is this a disappointing finish? Oregon predicted to have finished with their highest recruiting class ever, a top 5 class. Is this class already on the edge of being a disappointment, even though Bol Bol got hurt? Or you say, hey, whoa, 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 it's been like a few months. Let's see how these kids develop. Also, Oregon State's expectations. What do we expect from Oregon State in 2020? They finished last in the Pac-12 last year, but they got a nice collection of transfers. Is last okay as long as we see progress, or do we as people who follow sports in Oregon, do we expect that Oregon State from now on finishes with top 10, top 8 recruiting classes in the Pac-12? We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From 5 stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
We've talked about the class of 2019. We're past it. They're signed, sealed, delivered, and a lot of them are on campus at this point. And we previewed the Oregon high school talent in the class of 2020. But I wanted to early, before things really get in motion, talk about what the expectations are in the class of 2020 for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers. We just talked about the Oregon Ducks, that a top 3 Pac-12 finish and consistent top 20 recruiting classes should be the expectation. Now, if they get a top 10 recruiting class, feel great about that. But if they finish 12th, Oregon fan needs to not jump off a bridge. That would still be the second best class they've ever gotten. It's a new normal in Eugene, top 20 recruiting classes, but not so normal that you should say, if we don't recruit like Ohio State or Florida State, we're going to be furious. Oregon State finished last in the Pac-12 conference this year. And I think their fan base last year said, in the class of 2019, said, we'll be patient. we're kind of okay with it. Little disappointed, but we're okay with it as long as we see progress. So what is progress? And I think if you're Oregon State, Marcus, I think the goal, and an honest goal, is have some improvement on the field, because winning games does really help. Streamline your message a little better, because in the first year, you're always all over the map. Get on the same page and finish at least 11th. Beat one Pac-12 team, because right now, Oregon State only landed out of their 19 JC and high school commitments a small handful that had offers from other Pac-12 schools. If you finish 11th, that's going to have to mean that at least half of the guys you bring in had offers from other Pac-12 programs. And then you're talking about at least half the time you've got a shot to beat Pac-12 programs for the talent coming into your program. You've got bona fide Pac-12 talent then suddenly on the roster in a full class.
Yeah, and I think teams that that Oregon State could beat, right, or at least compete with, there's those Cals, right? Cal guys, Washington States. You know, I know Washington State obviously came off a great season, but I think you could still compete with guys like that, you know, those mid-level three stars. Same thing with Colorado. I think those three teams, Oregon State could really compete with. I think they kind of offer the same people. You would know better than me, obviously.
No, I think you're right. I think in a down year, too, I would throw whoever is the worst in a down year between Arizona and Arizona State. Yeah, it's sunny, but if you go 2-10,
the sun
why
sucks.
Not Oregon State? Yeah, who cares about being hot and practicing when it's hot when you're getting beat?
Yeah, well, that's what, and you were right, because if they can get those guys, this coaching staff at Oregon State, I think they're really good, like
I do
we
too.
Said. Really
are,
good developing players.
They are better X's and O's coaches than what Oregon has right now, mm-hmm. in terms of what we know and what has been proven. Now, could Oregon elevate? Sure. Could Oregon State elevate and make the gap bigger? Sure. But what we know, this staff can develop, and they have good X's and O's guys, mm-hmm. a lot of them in those rooms.
Exactly. And say you pull, like you said, you beat somebody, whoever it is in the Pac-12 in recruiting, those are more kids you get to develop, more kids that you have on your roster now that are a little more talented, a little better, maybe a little quicker. And then if you get these coaches to develop them, that's when you take that, okay, there's that progress step. Okay, then you sit back and you're like, all right, there we go. That's Oregon State progress. There's some progress compared to, you know, these transfers. You know, personally, I think they're going to be guys who come in and make instant impacts, right?
They need to be.
Yeah, they have.
Otherwise, don't take them.
Uh-huh, exactly. So they're going to need to come in, need to make these instant impacts. But when you see that, say they develop more, those are those next steps, right? And that's what we have to see, because if not, we're going to see the same thing.
That's a great point. And I think Gary Anderson even did an okay job initially at plugging the leaks. The problem was the guys underneath, the second string guys. And when you're bad, more injuries just crop up, because guys are like, my ankle. I mean, it just happens. When you go 1-11, more and more guys don't want to practice. More and more guys are banged up, too hurt to play. And the second and third string guys were guys who probably should have been in the Big Sky. So if you suddenly have your second and third string guys are bona fide Pac-12 guys, they're just young, you've at least got playmakers as you fill in the roster. And I think in the past, I've looked at Oregon State and went, not on the D-line. But on offense, I go, I like the starters. I think the starters can compete. I think that's a Pac-12 unit. They've got Pac-12 talent. And then when it's like, this guy's banged up, this guy's banged up, this guy's banged up, and you go, uh-oh, the backups are not good. And they need to fix that. They need more program depth. The way you do that is to start to have at least half your class not be developmental guys that are 3 years away. They need to be a year away. Because you can't have 3 years stacked of recruiting classes in a row that are 3 years away, or else, at best, you've only got two guys deep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I'm just going to say that my expectation for the recruiting class, it might be bold. At least move up two spots, right? At least 10. I'm gonna go on that limb and say at least 10, because I think what you could sell right now, it's unfortunate, right? Nobody wants to always say this, but you can truly sell playing time. You look at, you know, you tell these young, talented guys like Jamar Jefferson, hey, do you see what he's doing? You could come here and do the same thing.
If people don't think that Jamar Jefferson's success isn't huge for recruiting, they're crazy.
Exactly.
When you can point to a freshman and go, he didn't just play, he was a star, because someone's got to tote that rock. Someone's got to throw these passes. Somebody's got to catch these balls. Somebody's got to block. It's like, that could be you. And if you're pretty good, you're going to have the opportunity to show it right away.
Exactly.
It helps.
Yeah.
I've had kids tell me already in this recruiting cycle, they had a freshman last year that was one of the best players in the Pac-12, maybe in the country. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that That's true. And it's like, I could be that guy. You know, it helps. It really does. The hard part here is outside of playing time, and this has been my argument with Oregon State for a while, Oregon State eventually, you win enough games, eventually you can't just sell playing time. And then you need an identity. And it's great. Everybody can come in and sell winning, or, you know, an opportunity to rebuild a program and play right away early. But once you win, that goes off the table. You need an identity. Washington State has Mike Leach's offense. Colorado has the outdoors, and it is beautiful.
Super nice.
Utah's got that smash mouth defense. Arizona schools have girls in bikinis going to class, and you can not like that or say that's chauvinist. It's the truth, and it's what high school kids say. Like, man, I went on my visit, and oh my goodness, they say the talent.
Yeah.
The talent in Arizona is crazy. You can say what you want about that being fair or being appropriate. It's what the high school kids say, and it's the truth. I mean, it's a real factor. It's a real factor. Oregon State needs an identity beyond playing time, because eventually you hope you're good enough that you can't sell that anymore, and you need to have another hook. And under Gary Anderson, Corey Hall didn't have long enough. I think Corey Hall is going to be a great coach down the road. He's already a really good DB coach. He didn't have a hook because he didn't have enough time. You know, Riley, I thought, did the bring your lunch pail to work to Corvallis and let's work and build. And I think that started to get stale. I think he's a phenomenal coach. I think Oregon State fans who hate that guy are crazy.
Absolutely.
I think he's a wonderful man.
He's like my favorite coach of all time.
And a great football coach. And behind the scenes, teammates and people have, and I'm sure you have them too, have stories about things he did for his team his players that would jaw-dropping levels of sincerity and kindness for the fifth string receiver, the backup defensive tackle, things he noticed about them. Are you okay? And there's a family thing, and he helps take care of it out of his day in the middle of this Pac-12 slate. That's the kind of man he is. And if you don't want that guy in your locker room, you're insane. Oregon State, I think 11th. That's what I say. You say 10th. Oregon State fans who say top half just aren't getting it. We're a long way away from that. And not only that, but Washington, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Stanford, right now, realistically, even if they have bad seasons, are going to finish in the top 30. Oregon State's only had a couple years historically ever where they finished in the top 30. That's a really tall order to say top half of the Pac-12. It just is. And even if they have a 6-6 season, that doesn't mean, oh, we made a bowl game, or 7-5. Oh, we made a bowl game. We should be in the top half now. Recruiting is different than your on-field success.
Yeah, it's just, you have to win games. In my eyes, I'm always looking at it from a player. You know, you're the analyst. I just look at it. You win games. Kids are going to see that, because don't get me wrong, no matter what it is, I absolutely hate losing. If we're playing Jenga and I lose, I'm going to be pissed. Regardless what it is, I'm going to be mad if I lose. And a lot of these kids, when you come from these big places and you're the star, you don't want to go somewhere where you're going to lose, right? And you do nothing but lose. And the whole rebuilding process, 100% get that, like we said, you know, playing time. But I think what also Oregon State sold so much was, no matter what, the fans are always going to be about you, right? They're going to love you. It's the whole culture thing.
That's
at Oregon State.
That's a tough sell when you have guys come and visit for the spring game.
Yeah.
And it's 50 people.
Right. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why when you see that, it's a whole Oregon State community thing. Cause I mean, we're keeping 100% honest right now. They're not a good team. And it sucks being a former Beaver player. Right. And you see that, you're like, man, I just want them to be good. Right. And you see the success that some guys who used to play have in the league. You could sell that. But at the end of the day, I 100% think, in my mind, it's just wins. You win. The more you win, it's a long process, like you've said. It's a process that takes time. You chip away at it, and eventually you change some things. And if you chip away at it and get the wins, then that's when their recruiting cycle is going to pick up for you, and it's going to be that much better for your program. And that's how you, quote-unquote, right, build your program back up.
Right.
Compared to – you know, you can't flash them with, you know, crazy gear, the cool pictures, because let's be real, places that have, you know, more wins, more trophies, they can do that, right? And it's just the fact that if you have the other places have so much to show.
No, it's the icing on the cake, and that's what people don't realize. They go to Oregon, and they're impressed with the culture. They're impressed with everything else, and then they leave, and they have a photo gallery waiting for them that makes them look like a superhero. And it's like, oh, I get to share this. And then everybody's like, man, that looks awesome. And then it becomes, we should go together. And all this stuff builds. the photo edits and things like that, that's not the throne room for Oregon. That's not the highlight. The highlight is the relationships. The highlight is Justin Herbert might be the number one pick. The highlight is the atmosphere. And then, oh yeah, by the way, the thing I get to air quotes take home is this photo gallery that makes me look like I'm Thor. I mean, it just changes things.
Right, it does. It really does. And that's what I'm saying. So 100%, my expectation is, at least at Oregon State, top, if you can, do get 10, right? Obviously, it's easier said than done.
So let me ask you this. If they get 11th and finish like 49th in the country, do you say disappointing? I thought my expectation was 10th.
I'm going to say yeah, because I want to hold them to a higher standard, because I think, you know, we've...
Former players always do. They love to win, and it's like, oh, it kills me that my alma mater is not great.
Well, and it's tough, too, because I'm really tired of the whole, it's okay, right? It'll be okay eventually. Because I know for a fact, you know, I'm probably a hypocrite for saying this, because I say it a lot. I know for a fact, I'm like, I know it takes time, guys, so just relax. But, you know, there's just so much that you see some of these players and you can see their potential. It's just, you know, they have things they have to work on as a whole program. And the coaches know it, right? The players know it. It's just, at some point, you're just, you know, you're right. I'm just, you know, clenching my fists. I'm like, man. Right? I just want them to win. That's why when they beat Colorado, I was hyped, because I was like, there we go, right? There shows something, some sort of life for Coach Smith and his staff.
By the way, side note for both programs, then we got to get to break. Both Oregon and Oregon State have to underline, exclamation point, have to try to get a high caliber prep quarterback. Both these programs have been putting Band-Aids on spots. A couple of these guys that are on campus now are either transfers or high school guys that were the seventh choice, the sixth choice for the program. And it will show. I'm telling you, it will show if they don't bring in a stud. And people can get as excited as they want about that four-star or that three-star sleeper. The reality is, in a Pac-12 conference that's loaded with talented offenses, you have to have a big-time guy. And there is no argument from Oregon or Oregon State that they've gotten their guy in any of the last three or four recruiting cycles. Has not happened. Can't make that argument. If anybody tells you Oregon got their number one guy in any of the last three classes, they are lying to you. Same with Oregon State. They need to go get a big-time quarterback. Both of them will make that a huge priority. Oregon and Oregon State basketball. I got into a discussion with an Oregon State fan who clearly wasn't a huge fan that was talking about the disparity between the way we look at Oregon State's basketball season and Oregon's. Did Oregon disappoint? Did Oregon State disappoint? Or did they meet your expectations? We will talk about it and project going forward what these programs can do. The Ducks and Beavers next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From game tapes to junior days to recruiting visits, this is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
So I was going back and forth. I wrote an article about Oregon State's expectations seems to be the name of the game today. I was talking about what Oregon State should expect from the in-state recruiting hall in the class of 2020. Who should they target? And what should Oregon State fans look back on a year from now and say, we did a good job. We got these players. And we were talking about the difference between Oregon and Oregon State and the way you look at them. And he had mentioned that he felt I was overly hype for Oregon's basketball recruiting class last year. And I wanted to talk about both Oregon's celebrated recruiting class and Oregon State's. And Oregon State's group is coming to an end. The Trace Tinkle, Stevie Thompson, Jr., Derek Bruce, Drew Eubanks, Big G recruiting class, ranked 22nd in the country, the highest rated recruiting class in the history of the program, at least in terms of modern rankings. They made the tournament in year one. And then the Pac-12 was not good. And I think you could say historically bad. And during that stretch, Oregon State was at the bottom of the barrel. And then they bounced back and they had a top four seed in the Pac-12. And you go, you know, maybe if they make a run in this tournament and they make the NCAA tournament, you can say they made the tournament. This group made the tournament twice. They made it as freshmen and they made it as seniors. And I know Trace has another year, but we can feel good about that. And instead, I think this last game puts a sour taste in your mouth, particularly. I think you end up looking at this recruiting class and going, man, missed opportunity. If only Ja'Cory McLaughlin would have stayed. If only Derek Bruce would have stayed. If only we'd have put a little more depth around that core. I think we could have had something. And instead, we don't, and we may never, or at least not for a long time, get three or four top 100 kids in the country in one class again. And also, I, as just a basketball fan, how cool would it have been for Drew Eubanks and Kyler Kelly to be your post this year?
That would be unreal.
It would have changed things.
Yeah, big time.
And not that Drew Eubanks is playing in the NBA, I guess. You can't fault him. I wish he would have stayed. I think he had more development to do. But if he's playing in the NBA and they're CTC cutting that check, can't really argue with him. But, man, it would have been cool to see Kyler Kelly, Drew Eubanks, the Thompson brothers, and Trace Tinkle. That's maybe one of your best two starting lineups in the entire conference.
Yeah, that's a mean... a mean starting lineup. But like you said, you can't really, you know, you can't bag on Drew. He made a decision. You have to respect it. And obviously, you know, he might have had more development, but he made it, right? Coach Popovich obviously saw something in him, hence why he plays for the Spurs and the Spurs organization. But that is a mean lineup. And it, I get the whole coach of Suns thing, right? And that might be where a lot of people see so much success is you get those Thompson brothers. Like we said, Stevie is it, when Stevie's on, you know, it's almost like he can pull up from anywhere and make it. Trace, we already know Trace is an all around great player. And then Ethan is young, but you know, he's so athletic and he can get to the rim so easily. But you're right, I don't know if they really built around that core three like you think that they would. And you're right, I don't know if they'll ever get that top, you know, those top 300 players ever, not ever again, but in a while. And it's unfortunate because we wanted to see them make a run. And, you know, obviously
how
I'm
cool,
going to be biased.
How cool would it have been if Oregon State would have put together like a Sweet 16 run with this group?
Man, see, that would
have
been
so fun.
It would have been great because even when they made it to the tournament a couple years ago with GP2.
Without Trace, right. And they still played a functional game. They had a shot. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we were talking about that, and then the response came back, well, you haven't called this group for Oregon, this freshman phenom class, a disappointment. And my response to that is, I don't think I can. Bol Bol was playing like one of the top three or four freshmen in the country. Lou King made freshman all Pac-12, and if he develops and stays, and he might, because he doesn't look like a lottery pick to me, he's got a chance to be an all-conference guy next year. Will Richardson is coming on late and looks like he could eventually be the starting point guard or certainly a starting combo guard. And Francis Okoro is suddenly becoming a big-time player. Miles Norris is in this class. He scored 14 last night. This group didn't panic. This season's a disappointment, no question. Oregon's sixth in the Pac-12, and the Pac-12's bad. But this freshman class could still end up with Bol Bol in the NBA. Luke King has that length. If he develops, he could end up in the NBA. Will Richardson and Francis Okoro could be four-year contributors. And so I leave out Miles Norris. So could Miles Norris. If you end up with two NBA players and three four-year contributors out of a top 10 recruiting class, I mean, we'll have to wait and see what that produces in terms of wins. But I don't think you can call that a loss yet. I don't think you can call it a failure. You can call this year a disappointment. But, geez, Bol Bol got hurt. I mean, Marcus, am I crazy? I mean, you can play devil's advocate. I'm okay with it. I can handle that. I think if Bol Bol doesn't get hurt, Oregon's a top three team in the Pac-12. They were sixth. And I think they figured it out late, and credit to them, but they have nobody that can create their own shot, nobody that can shoot a three, and that hurts them.
Yeah.
And maybe those guys develop some of that, but I think it's too early. I think there's still a possibility they get 4.5, because Bol Bol only played a few games, productive players out of one recruiting class.
Yeah, and you're right. It's too early. I think the way I look at it is, you know, obviously we know the season was disappointing for him, right?
No doubt, and yeah, that's not the argument I made. I'm exactly. Just saying the class. Yeah.
The class.
Did the class
general.
Live up to it? We don't know yet.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If you get guys who contribute and get, you know, obviously constant playing time, they contribute, not only contribute, but they contribute a lot, then that in my mind is where you get your successes. If you can rely on these young guys like Oregon has at the beginning of the season, don't get me wrong, I was like, I don't know about these freshmen, they look inconsistent, they can't shoot, like they're losing to Texas State, like what's going on? But late now in the season, they couldn't play defense, at least in my mind, but they figured it out, like you said. So now when you see that, you know, the Ducks are on a 5-game win streak. I think it's 5 games if I'm correct.
Looking at it right now. They just teased the next game and 5-game win streak.
Exactly. So a 5-game win streak, that's, you know, that's pretty darn good right now. You know, you caught fire right when you needed to, and these freshmen have stepped up. I wouldn't call it a disappointment. I would say their season you know, for the most part was a disappointment.
No doubt.
But in this recruiting class right now, I think it's too early to tell. But if the guys play like they play now throughout their careers at Oregon, then no, it's not a disappointment. But if we see them play like they did at the beginning of the season, then that's when you can have a different argument.
Yes.
Then that's when you say, okay, yeah, maybe it was a disappointment.
And I think what's funny is individually the high-rated guys kind of for Oregon State lived up. Trace Tinkle, no one goes, man, shouldn't have been a four-star. I mean, Trace Tinkle, I think you can make an argument, should have been the Pac-12 Player of the Year.
Absolutely.
It's fine if you want to say he's one of the top two or three, but clearly one of the top two or three, and I think one in terms of all-around game. Stevie Thompson's a great player. There's no question he's a four-star guy. I think Ethan Thompson's going to fully live up to being a four-star guy. Drew Eubanks is playing in the NBA. It just didn't come together at the same time, at the right time. It's just, it is going to be one of those, and somebody should, if people did like local 30 for 30s, this recruiting class would be its own what happened 30
right.
for 30.
Because
it's like, if Trace didn't get hurt, if Drew didn't leave a year early, if we found Kyler Kelly a year before, if Ethan Thompson were a year older. I mean, if any one of those things happens, they probably have another tournament run.
Yeah, exactly. They certainly
a tournament
do.
Appearance.
Exactly. A tournament appearance, a tournament run, whatever it is, I would say you make it extremely deep into the Pac-12 tournament, but you're right. It's just some things didn't fall Oregon State's way. You know, everyone has to make the decisions that they made. You know, obviously with Drew, you can't really do anything about injury, but you're right. Individually, when you look at those three guys, they didn't disappoint. I mean, Stevie Thompson, right? He was, what they call him, like the UW killer for a second because he hit those two game winners, right? You have Trace.
There were great moments.
Absolutely. Those three, I think, you can't argue that, you know, they're bad players at all. I think they're phenomenal, but it was just unfortunate what happened. And you're right. If they had that 30 for 30, I would watch it.
I would too. Dana Altman signed an extension. I got a chance to talk to message with five-star small forward C.J. Walker. He kind of changed his tune about how he'd been feeling lately about the Ducks. Based on that extension, I'll explain next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 10A The Fan.
Five stars to unknown prospects. We cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, so we've got a plan for next week's show because the text line went a little bonkers there when we set a 30 for 30 on this Oregon State 2015 recruiting class and why they didn't have a little more success after that first season. Next week, hit up the text line, 55305, the Better You Today text line. We're going to talk about a 30 for 30 and different documentaries we would like to see if it were localized for Oregon and Oregon State. And the very, very best ones. So be thinking of them. Be ready to text into the show next week because we've had a lot more activity on the text line. There's been some really funny lines on the text line. Again, that's 55305, Better You Today text line. But that blew up. I mean, we got several dozen there just really quick. So we'll make that the show next week. We'll probably have it at guest or we'll talk about something to do with recruiting that's gone on in that week. But I like that idea. I think it's a fun topic. Marcus, you right away during the break was like, I've got some good ideas for 30 for 30s. And then with the text line, it just makes sense. But Dana Altman, they announced that he signed a contract extension through, is it 2022,
2023?
So I had talked to five-star small forward C.J. Walker, and this is all via Twitter DM and text and stuff, earlier, and he was concerned about the possibility Altman getting snatched away by somebody. And that was really there to the point that he'd expressed some nervousness that God, I signed, and maybe. So I sent him the tweet that Dana Altman had signed his extension and just got back a yes. C.J. Walker is thrilled, and that is so huge because that is a kid who has played like a top 12 to 15 player in the entire country here in this last year. Truly elite. His dunk was number one on SportsCenter. He just looks like an absolute freaky athlete. And he went from a little bit of apprehension, could Dana Altman leave during my time, to I now feel comfortable. If C.J. Walker feels that way now and he's signed, imagine what some of the unsigned kids who are 4 and 5 stars still sitting out there feel now that Dana Altman's locked up. You don't think they see what's going on with Kansas? You don't think they've heard the rumors about Louisville? You don't think they know about USC and the things that have gone on with that program? Arizona? How about my choices are Arizona, USC, or Oregon? And I'm a basketball recruit. What's the more stable situation right now? Dana Ullman just signed an extension. USC let Aunt Becky's kids come to the school. And when they finally, the news broke, her girls were on a yacht with their, what was it, dean of students or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
A yacht, though.
And then
I'm sorry.
A yacht, though. And Sean Miller may be out the door. I mean, Sean Miller's last thing was, I had a great 10 years here at Arizona or whatever it was. Oregon positioned himself with this to maybe get a little bit of a bump in recruiting. And I'm telling you, I've already gotten back from CJ that he's very, very excited about that. That is phenomenal news. Marcus, I don't think people realize is one of the underrated things, and it's something that right now Coach Smith has going for him. I think it's something that Oregon has going for them right now with Mario Cristobal. Coaching stability and the belief that the guy that's there now is going to be there for at least most of your career, if not all of it, that can become a huge selling point. And as much as people say, don't consider the coach, when you go on your visit, how many different professors tour you around or meet your parents or take all that time? How many coaches?
Oh, a lot.
Right.
All of them.
So everything about your recruitment is set up around the football program, and your face of when you meet the face of the university that's an adult, when your parent meets, I'm sending my kid here. They're not meeting the dean of students. They're not meeting the chancellor. They're meeting the head coach and the assistant coaches. So people who say don't pay attention to the head coach, don't pay attention to the assistants, they don't understand how the process works. That's all that's put in front of kids. Mm-hmm. Having that stability, how much does it matter?
It matters a lot. It just makes you feel comfortable, because as every Oregon fan knows exactly, and even Oregon State to an extent, with that Willie Taggart situation, he left, right? And he told people he was going to stay. You know, obviously it's going to frustrate the guys who just got to Oregon, the guys who planned on coming to Oregon, whatever it was, right? It was just a frustrating thing, because now all those kids feel betrayed.
Well, do you remember, they had that like Floragon movement?
Yeah.
Do you know the only one left is Jordan Scott? Every really? Single other one has left the program at this point.
Which is wild, right? And it makes sense.
And maybe Daywood Davis. I have to take that back. Daywood Davis is still there. I think they moved him to from receiver to corner. Clearly when you're low on the receiver pole, the totem pole, and they move you over to corner, it's not really working out. So in terms of production, all those kids are gone. It matters to have that coaching stability. Oregon locked it up. Again, next week, yes, it's going to have the recruiting lean, but we're going to talk about Oregon and Oregon State 30 for 30s. What would you want to see if somebody said, I'm doing 30 documentaries on Oregon and Oregon State? Don't take the lay-in stuff. Don't give me the lay-in stuff. Some of the more interesting backstory things that have gone on with the programs. And maybe we can have a couple like Kenny Wheaton's pick and the Fiesta Bowl season with Jonathan Smith. But aim for that kind of underrated story. That is going to be the show next week. Thank you, as always, for listening.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.